Newton's Principia and Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers are both called books, but they're completely different kinds of things. One contains a function, run it, and get answers. The other contains a narrative, read it and feel something. AI doesn't treat them the same way, and neither should you.
Yeah, that is that's such a crucial distinction to make right out of the gate.
Three types of books, three different futures. First, the function book where the author found the generating rule and the text is nearly lossless. Second, the data book where the data set is the real artifact and the book is a lossy interpretation. Third, the narrative book where there is nothing behind the text. Then, what happens when the function becomes natively machine readable? And what this means for anyone who writes, publishes, or commissions knowledge.
Right. And to really grasp where this, you know, this future of knowledge is heading, we kind of have to start by stripping away the romance of publishing.
Okay. What do you mean by the romance of publishing?
Well, think about the last time you read a truly dense, brilliant piece of writing. It feels expansive, right? Like this whole universe opening up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But the foundational concept here is that every document you read is fundamentally collapsed information.
Collapsed, like squished down.
Exactly. When an author writes, they're taking this this massive multidimensional web of thoughts, research, all their dead ends, their mental models, and they're forcing it through a tiny funnel.
Right, just to get it onto a flat page.
Yeah, to create a linear sequence of words. It is, by definition, a lower dimensional projection of a much richer reality.
Okay, let's unpack this idea of collapsed information, because the source material we're looking at today uses this really concrete analogy that honestly clicked perfectly for me.
Or the financial one. Yeah, that's a great one.
Right, the corporate financial document. So imagine you're looking at a company's Q3 profit and loss statement and P&L, and you see a line that says, you know, $47.3 million in revenue.
Which looks incredibly solid. Very authoritative.
Totally. But that document is just a frozen snapshot. It's a rasterization of maybe 214,000 individual atomic transactions. Mm. And every single one of those transactions had a timestamp, right? A specific counterparty, a category code. Maybe someone bought a coffee. Maybe a massive client signed a software license.
There's a whole story attached to each one.
Exactly. But in the P&L, all those rich atoms are just squished together. They're flattened and frozen into a single number on a page. So my question to you is a book essentially just a giant frozen P&L statement where the original transactions of thought are permanently lost?
It is precisely the same mechanism. Yeah. Mm. But I would actually argue the loss in a book is even more profound.
Wait, really? More profound than losing 200,000 transactions?
Yeah, because if we map this out, we are looking at a strict three-tier hierarchy of knowledge. At the very top, you have the function. This is the generating rule, like the underlying physics or a logic of a system.
Okay.
Below that, you have data. These are the specific observations, the atomic transactions in your P&L analogy.
Yeah.
And then at the very bottom, the third tier, you have documents. This is the P&L statement itself, the annual report, or, you know, the printed book. And the critical mechanism here is that information flows through this hierarchy in only one direction. It's a process of entropy.
Meaning you can't unbake the cake.
Exactly. The mathematical function generates the raw data. Then that data is rasterized, it's aggregated,
yeah,
stripped of nuance, flattened, and frozen into a document.
Right, a one-way door.
It's a completely one-way door. You cannot reconstruct those 214,000 individual transactions just by staring at the $47.3 million figure on the Q3 P&L.
Because that single number won't tell you if, like, sales spiked in the last week of September or if one massive client made up half the revenue.
Precisely. And in the exact same way, you cannot reconstruct the raw, multidimensional knowledge manifold of an author's mind just from reading their sequential text. The original geometry of the thought is just gone.
Wow. So every time you or I read a book, we are looking at a lossy compression. We're essentially just staring at a shadow on the wall, completely separated from whatever cast it.
That is the reality of the medium, unfortunately. But, and here is where this framework becomes incredibly powerful. If every book is a one-way collapse of information, then the true nature of the book depends entirely on what is actually being collapsed.
Ah, okay. So what was the original source material that the author shoved through that one-way door in the first place?
Right. And if you ask that question, you realize that not all books are created equal. And that brings us to the highest tier of our hierarchy, the function book.
Okay, let's look at that top tier, because this is where an author isn't just handing you a pile of facts or, you know, a nice story. They're handing you the underlying physics that actually generate the facts in the first place.
Exactly. A function book is defined by the fact that the author discovered a true generating rule. The classic examples here are monumental works like Isaac Newton's Principia, or Claude Shannon's A Mathematical Theory of Communication, or Euclid's Elements.
Wait, hold on. You just said all documents are lossy collapsed.
It did, yeah.
But if Newton collapses his entire understanding of physics into a book, isn't that just as lossy as a corporate P&L? I mean, how is that different?
It's a great question, but no, it's not the same. And the reason comes down to the nature of functions themselves. Functions are inherently low-dimensional and incredibly compact.
Okay, give me an example.
Think of Newton's second law. Force equals mass times acceleration, FA. That function is tiny. You could literally write it on a cocktail napkin.
Right.
Yet it implies every single classical mechanics calculation ever performed in the history of the universe. So when Newton wrote his book, he collapsed that compact function into prose and mathematical notation.
Oh, I see. Because the generating rule itself is so dense and perfectly structured, it survives the transition to the printed page.
Almost completely intact, yeah. It is a nearly lossless rendering. You, as the human reader, can extract that rule from the book and generate infinite amounts of your own data.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, and this is where I want to push back on how we interact with these texts today.
Okay, go for it.
If I sit down and read Newton, I get the generating rule. Sure, I can use it to make my own facts. But if the rule is the only thing that actually matters, why do we need the book format at all anymore? Like, if an AI can just run the math directly, isn't the prose just getting in the way?
You're touching on a high disruptive shift in how knowledge is stored right now.
Yeah.
AI absolutely can execute the function directly. It doesn't need Newton's 17th century Latin prose to calculate the trajectory of a falling object, right? Mm-hmm. It just needs the mathematical specification.
Right.
Because of this, the future of the function book is not a traditional bound volume. It becomes a dual artifact. When the function is natively machine-readable, the book becomes one rendering of a specification that AI can read directly. Human text for humans, machine specification for machines.
I love that concept. So the human reader gets the context, the historical background, the narrative of why the function matters, the emotional resonance of the discovery.
Exactly.
But the machine gets the raw executable code.
Right. They become two distinct readers pulling from the exact same single source of truth without getting in each other's way.
That makes so much sense.
But, you know, we have to acknowledge that most of human knowledge isn't quite as tidy as classical mechanics. Most authors haven't discovered a clean mathematical physics for their topic.
Yeah, that's rare.
Often, they're dealing with messy, complex systems where they simply went out into the world and collected a massive amount of observations.
This means we aren't dealing with a clean equation anymore. We've dropped down one level in the hierarchy to the second type, the data book.
That's right.
This is where the book is collapsing raw, messy data instead of a neat little compact rule.
The quintessential examples of the data book would be something like Charles Darwin's On the Origin of Species or Thomas Piketty's Capital in the 21st Century.
Okay, yeah.
These authors spent years, sometimes decades, painstakingly collecting highly structured observations. I mean, Darwin had his sprawling field notebooks detailing beak variations in finches.
And Piketty compiled those massive, complex databases of historical tax records spanning centuries.
Exactly. In these cases, there is no simple FA. The data set itself is the true single source of truth.
But the crucial thing for us to remember is that the data set is not what they published.
Right.
They published a book. They published a narrative wrapped around that data.
And that distinction is vital to how AI interacts with this tier.
Yeah.
Darwin's book is a lossy interpretation of a data set that exists independently of the book. The data set is the primary artifact. The book is one rendering.
So if you were to hand Darwin's book to an AI, it's basically like a museum curator who picked 50 specific butterflies out of a massive backroom collection of 50,000, right?
Yes, I like that.
And they put those 50 in a glass case with some nice little descriptive plaques. The AI doesn't need to look at the glass case or read the plaques. It can just go into the back room, look at all 50,000 raw specimens, and run its own reanalysis to find entirely new patterns that the curator completely missed.
That's a brilliant visual, but let's push the implications of that even further. The AI isn't just looking at the 50,000 butterflies in the back room. It's cross-referencing their geographic data, analyzing the microscopic structure of their wings, and running statistical models on their evolutionary divergence in seconds.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
A human curator couldn't do that in a lifetime. The book you buy at the store is just the curator's specific, highly subjective narrative path through the data.
Because it summarizes sample sizes, it quietly excludes outliers that don't fit the thesis.
Right, and it compresses incredibly complex measurements into readable, persuasive prose. Because that compression is so lossy, the future of the data book requires a fundamental structural change in how we publish.
You mean authors can't just drop a footnote anymore? They have to actually hand over the keys to the back room.
Precisely. The raw data set must be published alongside the narrative as a primary artifact in a machine-readable format.
Oh, I see.
The book becomes just one subjective interpretation pointing back to the data. AI can then independently analyze that raw data, completely bypassing the author's narrative wrapper, to aggressively test the conclusions or generate entirely new insights.
Okay, so function books give us generating rules, and data books give us structured observations.
Right.
But let's be real for a second. When you or I walk through an airport bookstore or look at the bestseller lists, we aren't seeing Euclid's geometry or raw tax databases.
No, definitely not.
We're seeing memoirs, leadership advice, novels, pop science. Where do they fit in?
That brings us to the bottom of our hierarchy, the narrative book. These are your standard commercial publications. Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers is a prime example in the nonfiction space, along with almost any novel, biography, or opinion-driven business book.
Okay.
The defining characteristic of a narrative book is that there is nothing behind the text. The text is the artifact.
Wait, I have to challenge you on that. Doesn't an author like Gladwell use data?
Well, he cites things, sure.
Right. He cites academic studies. He looks at the birth months of professional hockey players. He famously talks about the 10,000-hour rule of practice. Can't an AI extract the rule of the 10,000 hours and just execute it the same way it executes Newton's math?
It's a tempting thought, but it completely falls apart under scrutiny. The author's mental model in a narrative book is not formalized or mathematically structured.
It's not.
No, the 10,000-hour rule isn't a generating function. It's a rhetorical device. It is a collection of curated anecdotes and thematic interpretations woven together to create a compelling, persuasive story for a human reader.
Right, okay.
It relies entirely on your human cultural context to make sense of what success or meaningful practice even is. There is no underlying mathematical function for a machine to evaluate, and there is no structured, comprehensive data set acting as a single source of truth.
So you're telling me my AI isn't going to have a 10,000-hour rule epiphany and suddenly learn to play the violin?
Unfortunately not. When an AI reads a narrative book, it can summarize the themes, it can mimic the author's stylistic rhythm, it can generate variations on the argument, but it cannot execute the text.
Because there's nothing to execute.
Exactly. Because there is no true generating rule or data set to run. The AI's output is just a shadow of a shadow. It is generating a new surface-level narrative based entirely on an existing surface-level narrative. It is trapped in the text.
This distinction between the three types is so crucial. I want to make sure you listening right now can visualize this perfectly. Let's do a quick mental exercise. Imagine drawing out a whiteboard diagram. Picture a three-row diagram labeled by book type. Row one is the function book, generating rule text rendering AI execution. Row two is the data book, raw dataset analysis, text rendering AI reanalysis. Row three is the narrative book, simply text, artifact with no arrows. Now look at the future state below them. Row one gets a parallel arrow pointing from generating rule directly to machine readable spec. Row two gets a parallel arrow from raw dataset to published dataset. But row three stays exactly as is. That asymmetry makes the entire point.
It absolutely does. The asymmetry is stark, and it tells us everything about the future of knowledge work. Narrative books remain entirely unchanged in their structure. They are human artifacts built for human consumption, and they hit a dead end there.
Wow.
But a function and data books branch out. They open up a direct, machine-readable pipeline that completely bypasses the human text.
Seeing that stark asymmetry on our mental whiteboard leads to the ultimate question for us today. What does it actually look like in practice to design for that future state in row one? Like, if I'm a researcher or an author who actually has a generating rule, a true function, how do I publish that today so the AI can read it?
We are already seeing the vanguard of this shift right now. If we look at the source material for this deep dive, there are over 20 research papers on platforms like Zenodo detailing new frameworks, things like spectral brand theory and organizational schema theory.
Okay, I've heard of those.
What's fascinating is that these aren't being written as traditional textbooks. They are being designed as machine-readable specifications from day one.
Let's ground that, because machine-readable specification sounds incredibly abstract. What does that actually look like? Are researchers literally publishing lines of code instead of paragraphs?
Essentially, yes. They are publishing structured data formats, specifically things like YAML files. Yeah, YAML stands for YAML-8 Markup Language. It's a very clean, human-readable data serialization format that uses simple key-value pairs instead of dense prose.
Okay, got it.
These files are published alongside runnable prompt sequences and mathematical validators. Let me give you a highly practical example, the Activity Specification Protocol. This framework uses a single file called an iwant.yaml file to define a professional's entire set of capabilities.
Okay, wait, hold on. I need you to explain the mechanics of that. How does a single code file like iwant.yaml actually work in practice? Does the AI read the code and just essentially write an essay about me?
It's much more dynamic than that. Think of the YAML file as a function book in miniature. It is a strict generating specification. It defines exactly what a professional does, what their constraints are, and what outcomes they produce using structured variables.
Right.
Because it is a true level one function, it doesn't just sit there. From that one central machine-readable file, an AI can generate multiple highly customized human-readable renderings depending on the context.
So what kind of renderings are we talking about? Like, give me an example.
Sure. If the context is a networking event, the AI reads the YAML file and renders a concise conference speaker badge. If the context is a job hunt, it renders a persuasive LinkedIn bio.
Oh, wow.
If the context is a complex software system, it renders a highly specific query for an AI recruiting agent. The underlying YAML file is the single source of truth. The LinkedIn bio or the conference badge are just lossy projections, shadows on the wall created dynamically for specific audiences.
Wow. Most books I read are level 3 collapses. The interesting future is in level 1 functions.
It fundamentally changes what it means to author knowledge. If you are creating level 1 knowledge, your true, enduring contribution is no longer the beautiful prose you write to explain your idea.
Because the prose is just a rendering.
Exactly. The enduring contribution is the function itself, the machine-readable specification. The book or the article you publish is simply a temporary signpost pointing to the territory.
It's exactly like a modern video game. You, the human player sitting on the couch, get the beautiful graphics, the sweeping storyline, the emotional resonance of the music, that's the human rendering.
Mm-hmm.
But the console under your TV, it gets the raw code, the physics engine, the machine-readable specification. They are fundamentally connected, perhaps by a QR code at the end of a chapter in a book's case, but neither experience is complete without the other.
I'd say that captures the duality perfectly. For centuries, we have tried to force the human and the machine to read the exact same text. But humans and machines process reality differently.
Right.
Humans need narrative sequencing, we need emotional resonance, and we need social trust signals to absorb knowledge. AI does not need rhythm or narrative arc. It needs structured, typed constraints. By separating the two, by publishing the code alongside the prose, we finally allow both the human and the AI to interface with the knowledge in their native formats.
So we've covered some massive ground today. Let's do a quick recap. We started by realizing that every document we read, whether it's a sterile corporate P&L or a 300-page hardcover bestseller, is collapsed information.
Right.
It's a lossy, frozen rendering of a much deeper, higher-dimensional reality. Then we broke books down into three types. We have narrative books, where the flat text is the only artifact that exists. We have data books, where a rich, complex data set is summarized and squeezed into a subjective story. And at the top, we have function books, where the author has captured a true, mathematically compact generating rule.
And the critical takeaway for anyone working with information today is how AI interacts with that top tier. When the knowledge you possess is a true function, we no longer need to rely solely on the lossy human-readable collapse. We can expose the generating rule directly to the machine by passing the limitations of the printed page entirely.
Which means we are moving rapidly toward a world where the deepest, most rigorous ideas are published not as text, but as executable code with a companion guide. It is a massive tectonic shift in how we think about communicating complex ideas.
It is, and I think this raises an incredibly important question that extends far beyond the traditional publishing industry. If every document is a collapsed rendering of a higher dimensional thought, what does that mean for our everyday communication?
Oh, that's a good point.
Think about your own workplace right now. Are your daily emails, your meeting notes, your strategic plans just lossy pixelated renderings of your own internal functions? Are we constantly forcing our colleagues to painfully reverse engineer our complex thoughts from flat narrative text simply because we refuse to share the underlying specification itself?
That is a wildly uncomfortable but totally necessary thought to leave you with. How much time are we all wasting trying to uncollapse each other's documents? Episode 14 takes this one step closer to home, what happens when the rendered artifact isn't a book, but your professional identity. Your CV is the same kind of lossy compression as a narrative book, and it has the same solution. Episode 11 traces the same pattern in the deepest case, the genome itself,